The verdict, as both the government and the defendants had wanted, came swiftly. Barely 3 weeks after the lawyers fell silent, federal judge Denise Coate delivered a crushing judgment against Apple. Welcome to Copyright Clearance Center's podcast series. I'm Christopher Keneally for Beyond the Book. In her ruling, Judge Coate found that Apple had indeed conspired with book publishers to inflate the price of ebooks when it launched the iPad in 2010. The case will linger yet for some time. Apple will appeal, and if damages are ever paid, that day may be a long way off. As he does every Friday on Beyond the Book, Andrew Albanese, Publishers Weekly senior writer, joins me to review this very important news this week and look ahead to what book business denizens will talk about next week. Thanks for joining us, Andrew.
Greetings, Chris.
Well, Andrew, this is your story. You're the author of the best-selling Kindle single, The Battle of 999, how Apple, Amazon, and the Big Six publishers changed the ebook business overnight. And so we turn to you and look forward to what you have to say about all of this, as we sit at the top. So the judge has spoken, and we are now with a decision firmly against Apple.
Yeah, that's right. And really, it's not much of a surprise at all, really. Judge Coate had said from the outset that she had structured the trial to deliver a quick verdict. And that's what both parties said they wanted. And indeed, she delivered a quick verdict just 20 days after the conclusion of the trial. So, you know, as I'd explained on the show, I think a few times for PW, Apple's defeat was based largely on the fact that it was unable to persuade the court that the case was not a per se violation of the Sherman Act. A per se violation essentially means that the facts of the case establish conduct that is so clearly outside the law that the court condemns it without regard to any motivating factors, such as, you know, Amazon's below cost pricing. Now, Coate also said that even though the case was not viewed as a per se violation, she also believed that Apple still would have lost, even if she had undertaken a more deep fact analysis. But the fact that she didn't have to go there really made the ruling a slam dunk. And in the final analysis, the case wasn't even close.
So take us through the decision. How did the judge arrive at this conclusion?
As you may remember one of our podcasts, I sort of told listeners to pay attention to how Apple was arguing its three main lines of defense, rather than trying to parse what each witness was, you know, saying on the stand on a given day and how those statements might play against, you know, innocence or guilt. Well, indeed, Apple lost badly on all three of those lines of defense, and Coate outlined that very eloquently in her decision. First, Apple had argued that there was no conspiracy to raise prices and that it was the publishers who, in fact, had raised prices. And, you know, if there was a conspiracy, hey, it wasn't us, it was them. But Judge Coate was thoroughly unmoved by this argument. Yes, the conspiracy required the full participation of the publishers. And yes, the publishers wanted to change Amazon's pricing policies. But that did not erase Apple's own intentions, which were to basically avoid price competition with Amazon. Judge Coate also added that the record was equivocal on whether Apple itself desired higher ebook prices, but unequivocal that Apple had embraced those higher prices. Apple's second line of defense was that Amazon and the other retailers actually kind of embraced the agency model. And that was evidenced by their adoption of agency deals that were nearly identical to Apple's, contracts that even included an MFN. Well, you know, this was always a long shot argument in my mind, and Judge Coates soundly rejected that argument as well. Amazon clearly did not relinquish its control over retail pricing easily, she ruled. And last, Apple had sought to show that the ebook market actually suffered no ill effects. So if this was an anti-competitive conspiracy, well, there were only pro-competitive results, right? You know, once again, Coate shot this argument down completely. But she did, in her approval of the initial three settlements, she stressed that even if Amazon was guilty of foreclosing competition through below-cost pricing, that wasn't going to justify the kind of collusion she saw here. The question in the Apple case, she added, was always a narrow one, whether Apple facilitated and encouraged an illegal plan to restrained retail pricing. And the answer she found, based on the record, was yes, they did.
Well, now that we know what they did, what happens next? What kind of effects can we expect?
Well, the short answer is we don't expect much to happen immediately. Remember, the publisher settlements already have changed the way the ebook market functions and how things are sold. So we're not going to really see any immediate effects on ebook prices. But in 2014, when the publisher sanctions expire, things are going to get really interesting. For one, the discounting that retailers are now allowed to apply, well, that's going to end, meaning that publishers will have more control over final consumer prices. And as we know through this trial, publishers have always thought that ebook prices were a little low, and they want to essentially manage their print against their digital. So I think that means we should see prices begin to go up in 2014. At the very least, we can expect some really difficult and heavy negotiations to take place between publishers and Amazon, as well as Apple and Barnes & Noble. And remember, there's going to be no price parity clauses, no MFNs either, because those have been outlawed for a period of 5 years. For Apple, they're going to appeal, obviously. But if they eventually, but if they lose, they're going to have to come up with some damages, and there may be a mini trial on the damages phase. That could be like a Christmas gift for publishers if that actually happens. For one, you know, consider the fact that if Apple pays big money to consumers in the form of ebook credits, as was mandated in the publisher settlements, that is a chunk of Apple money that is going to flow directly into publishers' hands. So thank you very much for that.
And it'll be books that'll flow into people's Kindles and iPads as well.
Indeed.
All right. Well, so there have been some other news items in the book business world this week, of course. And there's a story that also we kind of knew where it was going to wind up, and that is that Penguin and Random House have completed their merger.
Yes. While we were off, that deal got done, and we now have the mega publisher we were long expecting when the merger was announced. Now, you can read all of it about this on the PW website if you haven't already. There's a lot of interesting information there, and there's not really much new to add except, wow, can I add? This company will have combined revenues of almost $4 billion. That's, you know, roughly triple its next competitor. And as we had known all along, Penguin's John Macon is going to lead the new company as chairman, and Marcus Dole will serve directly under him as a worldwide CEO. But, you know, for me, here's the thing to really keep in mind, and this is going back to the Apple case and that 2014 date that I had mentioned, because that's when the DOJ sanctions are going to end, and then publishers are really going to begin angling towards their first post-Apple ebook deals with their retailers. And Penguin Random House, obviously, is going to have significantly more clout in those talks. And I'll bet you a dollar right now, Chris, I'm not going to do the Mitt Romney $10,000 bet because I'll never be able to afford that, but I'll bet you a dollar on this show that before those sanctions end in 2014 hits, that we're going to see another merger.
I'll get my wallet and get back to you. Anyway, well, speaking of all these new retail arrangements, it's going to be interesting to see where Barnes & Noble figures in all of this. Clearly, again, there's been some striking news there. We've seen CEO William Lynch take a walk away from his desk.
Yeah, you know, as you suggest, Barnes & Noble is in a tight spot. And as you know, William Lynch resigned as CEO of Barnes & Noble. With the Nook Media strategy just floundering, you know, things are not looking good for the company. As one analyst on our site put it, it's a Band-Aid for a gunshot wound at this point, what it's looking to do. But you know what really caught my eye is that no one was named to directly replace Lynch. In fact, you know, as the company considers splitting or selling off its Nook business, you know, they're just going to kind of hold on for now. And for publishers still jittery after the borders collapse, man, that can't be comforting at all. And we've talked to a few, and we know that they're like, you know, they're pretty nervous about where things are going. You know, Lynch's resignation comes after pretty much a disastrous 3.5 years. Under his tenure, I mean, the ebook market has just been a unmitigated problem for them. You know, Lynch was the guy who was credited with overseeing B&N's aggressive expansion into device manufacturing, but things have not worked out well at all. They've booked about a $475 million loss last year for the Nook. And what's interesting is that digital content sales were actually up 16.2%. But overall, things were way, way off. So that shows you that the devices are just killing them. So where does it go from here? We just don't know, but it certainly can't go on like this.
Well, no, it can't. And finally, there's another case that we've been chatting about for quite a long time. We wonder how much longer it can go on. Again, while we were away, the Authors Guild lost its class action status in the Google book case. What does this mean going forward?
You know, I think the Authors Guild may finally have to realize that this fight is over. As you know, a three-judge panel of the Second Circuit has vacated Judge Denny Chin's 2011 ruling that granted the Authors Guild class action status in its suit to stop Google's library scanning project. You'll remember in his initial ruling, Chin held that the commonalities among the works scanned would have made individualized fair use analyses unnecessarily burdensome and in many cases duplicative. But the Second Circuit disagreed with Chin and found that the fair use questions should be addressed before determining class certification, mostly because the fair use issues could moot the class certification altogether. So, you know, our trusty legal affairs contributor, James Grimmelman, has a great piece on our website. So if you're wondering what this all means, you should check that out. But he said he believed that the Second Circuit decided to gently signal to Chin what it thought about the fair use question. And what it thinks is that Google's going to prevail. So it invited Chin basically to just cut to the chase. You know, class actions are cumbersome, they're slow, and they're expensive, as we've seen through all the action that's gone on so far. So why should we spin up all that machinery if this case is just going to be dismissed on fair use grounds in the end? So given where things stand, we're still expecting another Second Circuit ruling, which is on the Authors Guild case against HathiTrust. If they lose that appeal, the Authors Guild, and the HathiTrust is found fair use, that is really going to be game, set, and match. But I think the Authors Guild would be wise at this point to see things as over. And for all the other reasons that we've discussed on the podcast before, I think their resources are probably better spent elsewhere.
Well, a decision not for us to make, Andrew, but for the Authors Guild and Paul Egan to do that. We'll leave it to them. We'll look forward to hearing from you for all the coverage around the Google Book case, the HathiTrust case, as well as the continuing after effects of the decision by Judge Cote this week in the Apple ebook price fixing trial. We've been chatting with Andrew Albanese, senior writer for Publishers Weekly. Thanks again for joining us.
My pleasure, as always.
And we'll remind people to go have a look for the Battle of 999, how Apple, Amazon, and the Big Six publishers changed the ebook business overnight. It's on Amazon.com as a Kindle single, and it's been a bestseller since it came out just late last month. So we hope.
And I should note, there's an update that's going to be out on Monday, taking in recent events. So, well, and that will be free to people who have already bought the book.
Well, that's great news. Thank you for letting us know that. I mean, that gives you an idea of just the way the world has changed. It's an instant book, instantly updated.
Instantly updated, indeed.
Right. Beyond the Book is produced by Copyright Clearance Center, a global rights broker for the world's most sought-after materials, including millions of books and ebooks, journals, newspapers, magazines, and blogs, as well as images, movies, and television shows. Follow Beyond the Book on Twitter, find us on Facebook, and subscribe to the free podcast series on iTunes or at the Copyright Clearance Center website, copyright.com. Just click on Beyond the Book. Our engineer is Jeremy Brisky of Burst Marketing. My name is Chris Keneally. For all of us at Copyright Clearance Center, thanks for listening to Beyond the Book.